All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, November 1st, our first NBA podcast. I am Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we're excited to start bringing podcasts for the National Basketball Association 2 to 3 times a week on some of the bigger slates. If this is your first time with us, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or just dfsr.com. And you can go over to the site, you can grab our basketball projections for FanDuel and DraftKings. Wildly successful. I think we've cashed every main slate basketball since the first day except for one. So, and that was we were off by, I think, like a percentage point. So very, very excited. This is year over year growth and success for us in NBA. Just want to bring it to podcast form now. So we're really excited. It's a free 3-day trial to our projection system. And then just $29.95 a month after that. And that gets you access to NBA. It also gets you access to our NFL projections coming off a great week. So you probably aren't going to find a better deal than that, I think, in the whole entire industry in terms of membership levels. So go over free for 3 days, check it out. And then just $29.95 a month. All right. I think for our first podcast, we'll just mostly go through some of the cash game plays that we have for today. We'll probably, as we get going, as we, you know, get our feet wet, so to speak, with the NBA piece of it, we'll probably take a look at some different formatting issues that we can do with NBA. But for today, we'll concentrate mostly on what we see as some of the cash game plays going in. One weird sort of note for today is that there's a random 6 o'clock game between Cleveland and Houston that starts the FanDuel slate. And then that game is not on DraftKings. So you have a main 6 o'clock slate over on FanDuel, and then you wait an hour and do it on DraftKings. I'm not exactly sure why there's a 6 o'clock game. That's a pretty rare thing. But hey, throw a little monkey wrench into your Tuesday. All right, buddy. Let's start with point guards. We started arguing about this off the air, and then we said, let's just pause and wait. The big news comes yesterday where Ricky Rubio looks like he's going to be out indefinitely, moving Chris Dunn into the starting lineup for the Timberwolves. I called Chris Dunn basically a must play in cash games at his price. You threw some shade on that.
And then you implied that I would be embarrassing the business by disagreeing with that even in the slightest. I didn't imply it.
I actually just said it.
I think you can let me go ahead and make my own point then. You don't need to put words in my mouth. Okay. Take the words out my mouth.
Implied would make it sense like I was kind of dancing around the subject. No, I just said I don't want you to say this online on air in our first podcast because it's embarrassing. But go ahead. Tell me why you can get away from Chris Dunn in cash games today.
Let me just start by saying I'll probably wind up playing Chris Dunn tonight. So I'm not saying that it's a bad play by any stretch. What I'm saying is that, you know, when I hear a term like must play, it implies that, you know, you'd have to, like, there's essentially no case against playing a guy. And there's a case against playing Chris Dunn. I mean, he's a rookie. We have 35 total minutes of NBA basketball from him so far, so an absurdly small sample. He's obviously got a new coach, all rookies do. His coach does have this tendency in the past, like you pointed out off air, that, you know, he tends to put his starters out there and run it, but he's also a coach that doesn't like to play rookies very much. And so I could definitely see scenarios where Dunn looks raw early on and Thibodeau gets impatient and pulls him. And I mean, the production we've had from him so far is way less than some of the elite rookies we've had in the past, elites on a per minute basis. And so, like, the 10 fantasy points he had in 20 minutes in a great matchup with Sacramento leaves me wanting more. If he does that in 35 minutes even, he'll have not paid this $4,000 price tag. So that's all I'm saying is that it's a good play. It's not that big a slate. You can wind up getting some value here, but I just don't think it's a slam dunk.
I think
now make your incorrect case.
You make it. I almost want to take that out because I don't want people thinking this is the idea. But I think the thing with Rubio, or excuse me, the thing with Dunn that is encouraging is, like you said, is the Thibodeau's a rotation guy. He doesn't get away from his rotations. He did that with the Bulls, and that's why we could usually count on guys like, you know, he was called Jimmy Minutes for a reason when Thibodeau was coaching Chicago with Butler.
Was he called that?
Oh, I mean, I called it that. No,
I've never heard.
Oh, really? Yeah, no, I thought that. I remember that name being thrown around. But with Dunn, the really encouraging thing is he was the clear just pivot off of Rubio at point guard anyway. So like exactly 48 minutes of their point guard play last game was between Rubio and Dunn. Like they weren't shifting Levine to the point guard, which the Timberwolves had done in the past. This is just a clear, you know, A to B move. They weren't totally in love with Rubio, I don't think, to begin with, for good reason. Like he has certain flaws in his game. I just can see a situation where Dunn does play upwards of like in that low to mid 30s worth of minutes tonight as they just kind of test him out in that starting lineup. And that just kind of minute upside for the $4,000 you're going to pay for him on DraftKings. And I can't remember what the salary is. It's cheap on FanDuel, but
4,000.
Right. So just that that cheap level of play makes it just very, very difficult to get away from for me. Am I overstating it by saying must play? Maybe. I don't know. I just think he'll be the chalk play. This news came out way early enough that he'll show up in everyone's picks, really throughout the industry. This is not a guy that anyone's really going to miss on.
Yeah, a note on Dunn's favor, I think, is the fact that the Wolves just have terrible guard depth in general. Yeah. Like, I think LaVine actually is a great candidate to slide into that point guard role. And if they, for instance, had the guys they had last year, like Kevin Martin or, you know, just other guys that can fill in on the wing, then I think that Dunn would be a lot more at risk. But yeah, the other names I'm seeing here, Brandon Rush, and that's pretty much it.
Tyus
in terms of guys who can play at the guard position. I do think that you can probably wind up getting some safety there, but yeah, just some red flags. I mean, just two field goals attempted in 20 minutes in his second game. You know, that could be a coaching base thing. He was known as a shoot first guy coming out of college. So yeah, I think just the overall lack of depth there probably does make him way closer to a must play than anything else. He's definitely not a fade for me necessarily, but you know, I just want to be cautious about using terms like must play because I think they just get overused generally industry-wide.
Yeah, Tyus Jones, he's probably the backup point guard at this point, didn't even play in the first two games, which tells you all you need to know about where Thibodeau thinks of him. So I'm encouraged. Thibodeau is such a great guy to have around for DFS purposes because there's some teams like the Nets who are just a total disaster. Like I know you were off last night. I was watching this game. Like the Nets are just the opposite of this, where in DFS you just simply, well, the Nets just, I could probably do an entire first podcast just about my hatred for the Nets, from like just the basketball operations all the way down to how they employ it on the court. Like it just, every single thing about them doesn't make any sense. Like they're almost taking a tanking strategy for a team that doesn't need the tank or actually can't afford to tank.
They don't have their picks.
They have no draft picks.
Right? I mean, it's legit. I mean, internally, we've just called them a little league team, right? Where you remember the little league team where there was the mom who'd complain because their kid didn't get enough playing time. That's what the Nets are right now. They just don't have any clue at all what, you know, who's the good players are in their team. And if you don't know who the good players are on your team, chances are pretty good you just don't have any good players.
Well, they just clearly don't. Anyway, that's a different topic for a different day. I'm sure we'll get into them next time that they play, and I can rant and rave and just go off in a filibuster about them. A couple other point guards that to take note of today. Dunn, clearly, I think, from a points per dollar standpoint, tops the list. The couple other guys that jumped out to me, at least, just from sort of a safety perspective. One is Elfrid Payton. The Magic are another one of these teams that they've had some sort of front court issues in terms of understanding where they wanted to pull their rotations, but the backcourt's been pretty set. It's been Payton and Fournier under Frank Vogel. Do you see Payton at this point as like a cash game play? He goes up against Philly. Does he do enough for you, or like the minutes set enough for you to like just consider just throwing him out there sort of in that mid tier?
Yeah, Payton definitely came into his own a little bit last year and turned into a relatively consistent fantasy commodity. One thing I like about the Magic this year in general is that they do seem to be committing in a more focused way on who's going to get the minutes, because they were nothing. I mean, I've literally never seen a team like what the Nets are doing this year, but the Magic had come close last year sometimes, you know, moving Fournier and Oladipo. And there's very Aaron Gordon comes to mind as well. Guys just really getting inconsistent minutes. So far this season in non-blowout games, Payton's played at least 34 minutes. Granted, it's only two out of three games, but yeah, his usage is very strong. I mean, the assists are there. So far averaging, you know, not a point per minute. He's not up in that stratosphere, but I think you can probably count on him for 28, 29 fantasy points a game. And that's just solid production in a nice matchup with Philly. I could easily see him, you know, basically having his best fantasy game of the season.
Yeah, Philly's not playing at a breakneck pace like they have in the past, but they're still playing pretty quick. They're just still not a very good team, all things.
They're just playing badly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Philly, they're like 2 years ago, Philly was on par with the Lakers in terms of the play fast, play bad strategy. Mm-hmm. Now they play a little bit more slowly, but still play extremely badly. So I'm happy to take point guards against them for sure.
The other guy is Tim Frazier. Frazier is, you know, kind of ends up being this last man standing sort of point guard play for the Pelicans. Holiday's out. Tyreke Evans, who not much of a point guard, but they would play him there. He's banged up. So Frazier has just gotten a majority of those point guard minutes for the Pelicans. The big thing that I'm encouraged with him is that between him and Davis, who we'll clearly get to in a little bit, they're just taking most of the shots, and just his usage rate is good enough that I think that he strikes me. He might even be a little even safer than Payton from that standpoint of view. Payton has a better matchup, but I think Frazier. There's just very few offensive options for the Pelicans at this point. This is why Davis's usage rate is just totally insane this season. But Frazier strikes me, like, if you were to play, you know, who would you, if you had to play one or the other, Frazier or Payton, you know, Frazier a little cheaper, where would you go?
Well, I think I'd go Frazier, and I think, you know, it can sometimes be tricky to take a guy after a pretty bad performance, but, you know, the Spurs are going to be most teams' worst matchup during the season just because they get involved in these big blowouts and generally play really good defense. Can be especially tough for teams like the Pelicans, who don't really have their act together to put together good offensive sets and things. But on Frazier, so this year he has 5.9 minutes of time of possession per game per the SportView tracking data, which puts him on par with guys like Eric Bledsoe, you know, Rondo, Kyle Lowry, you know, in that kind of range, if people aren't used to interfacing with that kind of data. So while he's not one of the elite guys like Russell Westbrook or something, that's still quite good. I mean, you hear those other names in that category and you're hearing guys that are priced considerably higher than he is. And while time of possession isn't everything, for point guards, it winds up making a huge difference with things like assists per game, to say nothing of shots and rebounds and so on. So yeah, Frazier, what I really like about him is just he's going to wind up with the lead assists if he just winds up holding the ball that often. We've seen that play out so far with 28 assists in just 96 minutes on the court. That's a rate of 14 assists every 48 minutes. So, yeah, I love Frazier. I think he's going to wind up being 10 or 15% more expensive as the season progresses. And we're just buying super low here.
And the interesting thing about, like, just, you know, on ball time for a guy like him as opposed to Rondo is that Frazier's possessions can end in sort of like two ways, where Rondo's typically only ends in one.
Shots, right? As well.
Right, exactly. Like, so Frazier will put the shots up as well. So, like, that's a great point about just that kind of ball time with the price just being significantly lower. I think you get a nice opportunity where the prices are sort of swapped between Frazier and Payton on DraftKings and FanDuel. Payton's cheaper, right, on DraftKings. Frazier's cheaper on FanDuel. So if you play both sites, which we always recommend doing, you get a nice opportunity to sort of have both at the right price point. So then the last guy today on the point guard that we wrote, or I kind of made mention of, was Curry. It's a different price tier for sure, but Curry's an interesting guy, right? Like, so he's cheap. Like last year he was in that 10,000 range, right? And now on FanDuel, he's more in that 8,800 range. At what point do you think he's taking less shots? And one big thing for him is the rebounds are way down from last year. Like, he was a 5 or so rebound per game guy. Those have just totally disappeared. Do you think that is really just lowering his floor at this point? Do you still think he has upside in this game against Portland? Like, what are your thoughts on Curry?
Curry, I think, is a really interesting guy to try to pin down right now because he was in such a consistent situation for so many years, and now Durant's arrival, I think, has really shaken things up. I mean, everyone knew it would shake things up, right? I mean, just by virtue of the fact that you're going to get one of the highest usage guys on the NBA on your team, that's naturally going to shake everything up. But it's kind of shaken them up in different ways as well. I mean, it's kind of odd to say, but you get a sense of maybe complacency might be the wrong word, but less urgency, especially on the defensive end coming from Golden State. You're looking at the rebounds, which is certainly a hustle stat. I'm looking at the steals as well. I mean, for Curry to have a 3-game stretch with just one steal, I could be wrong, but I don't think that happened all of last season. And actually, no, I was wrong. It did happen. It happened in the playoffs when Curry was injured. He missed, you know, some time both against the Rockets in Cleveland, and that was the only time last season where he had a stretch of 3 games with one steal or fewer. In that stretch, he had 0. But that is just, I mean, we talk about sample size and 3 games not being a very long sample size, but for stuff like these hustle stats, those do tend to normalize more quickly than other things because, you know, like for point guards, for instance, like getting rebounds, scrambling around in the lane or hustling to open spots where the ball like lands on the ground, that stuff is just based on hustle. And I'm not here to say Curry's not hustling, but if he's not hustling even just to a little bit less degree, you know, there just aren't a lot of 6-foot-tall dudes who get 5 rebounds a game, right? So if you take those two things out of his game, reduce the shots by 10%, you just might not wind up with an $8,700 player. So I guess I'm in kind of wait and see mode on Curry. I'm going to do my best to not play him, I think, but, you know, I could also see it swinging back the other way. I mean, especially in kind of a high profile matchup with Portland here. So not to say you can't play the guy tonight, but I think there's at least a little bit more worth looking into here.
Yeah, it's interesting with him because you know, when they replace Durant with Barnes with Durant, Barnes wasn't a huge rebound guy and Durant is. So those have to go somewhere, right? And so when you just trickle down all these stats just a little bit off like the edges for guys like him, then all of a sudden he's just not a safe guy. I don't think I would play – you definitely don't have to play him in cash games. And I know what people are going to say is, well, you know, Golden State – this is a question we definitely get. No Golden State guys in the lineup. You know, they're projected for the most points. Yeah. Yeah, they're projecting all those points because they're like the best team. It doesn't mean that they're all value plays, right?
You have all NBA guys at four positions, like
right, exactly.
You're going to score a lot of points when you do that.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, and there just is other point guard value, and the guys we mentioned just coming much cheaper. But I do see Curry as like a heat check tournament guy for sure in this matchup, especially if the game can stay close. One guy,
I think that's where we're headed with Curry for sure. I think that he's going to not be. I think a lot of the Golden State guys just aren't going to be cash game plays if they're going to be this inconsistent.
Wait on that, because I'm going to go to shooting guards now with Klay Thompson. So I'm just going to – beautiful segue by me right there, by the way. So FanDuel today at shooting guard is basically daring you to play Klay Thompson at 5,800,
yeah.
Right? They that's price. He was a guy last year when he was really dialed in, was somewhere in like that mid-7,000s range, and yep. Now he's at 58. The key number I focused in on him with him, 14% from three-pointer, right? He's still getting three-point looks, not as many as he had last year per minute. That makes sense with Durant. But he's shooting so bad from three and still kind, you know, he'll still chip in a rebound or an assist here and there. It's mostly just the price. And if he's going to get three-point looks, he's just not going to shoot this bad, right? And from a cash game point of view, this is a guy, because the total is so high, here is where you can get some value. I think he's the clear guy I want to get value in on this game because the price has dropped. He's still shooting threes when he gets the ball. Like, that's his MO. And he's just not going to shoot this bad. So there you have it. The price has dropped because of the bad shooting.
Yeah, so this is a totally ridiculous, not stat-based theory about Golden State right now. Because all of the stuff you said is correct. Like, I mean, yes, totally. I think Klay Thompson could be a value on these prices and, you know, could wind up slipping through the cracks of, like, everyone losing the usage just based on the fact that he's cheap and his upside is just ridiculous compared to other guys at this price point. But my pet theory, like, just from playing pickup basketball,
is if you ever played pickup basketball. Oh, God, this is like a Bill Simmons.
Channeling my inner Bill Simmons. Love you, Bill. If you want us to work for the Ringer, we will. But
I got a little sick to my stomach when I heard you say when I played pickup basketball.
Well, when we play pickup basketball. So this actually holds water. And don't take this as analysis, please. Take the other really smart stat-based stuff we've said as analysis. But have you ever played pickup basketball with a guy who's just so good that – he's just like too comfortable and almost embarrassed, like trying his best and going in and just dunking every time. And so instead he kind of like hangs back and just shoots threes. I'm not saying that's what's going on in Golden State, but just that lack of urgency thing, this is just totally an eyeball test. You know, I did watch a ton of Golden State games last year, and I've watched at least some part of every game this season. And it just kind of feels that way. I don't know how else to say it other than, last season, it feels like they would have beaten New Orleans and Phoenix by more than a combined 14 points. Just throwing it out there, I don't know. That's all I want to say about that. Frankly, the most encouraging thing to me about Thompson is actually his minutes.
Yeah.
The fact that he's playing four more minutes per game, above everything else, and you can get him at essentially 2,000 less, paints a better picture on Thompson for me. But the lack of urgency thing in Golden State could become a thing. Or it could totally shift the other way and everyone can become more valuable. But
well, the problem with the minutes for Golden State last year was they were just crushing everybody, right? And so it wasn't that like they had these weird low minute rotations. It was just that the game was over by the end of the third quarter. And so really, and Thompson was especially susceptible to the minutes problem because his rotations would have him sit the second half of the first and third quarters or somewhere, not maybe exactly at the halfway mark, but he was the first guy off.
Like he would go out in like 5 minutes left in the third.
Exactly.
And then generally start the fourth in close games.
Right. Exactly. So when those games were over, he never got back in. Now the games have been, they got curb stomped by San Antonio in the first game, but the games against New Orleans and Phoenix were both close. I mean, unbelievably, but they, and this one stands to be sort of close too. It's in Portland and the total, they're not like runaway favorites. And I think Vegas is probably still having a little trouble evaluating. I mean, really, if this had been the first game of the year, there's no way Golden State would have been -4.5 going into this game, right? Like they were -9.5 or something like that against the Spurs in game one, right? So I think Vegas is all
over. But keep an eye on the minutes thing, because Golden State does have a history of weird minutes, even in seasons where they weren't setting records for the most wins. Like 2 years ago, I think it's easy to forget, in 2014-2015, both Klay and Curry averaged fewer than 33 minutes per game. So they've always kind of run more spread out rotations than like Tom Thibodeau-led teams and stuff. But I do take the Thompson thing as a positive sign that they might be heading in the direction, you know, maybe some questions about wing depth there. You know, Harrison Barnes, while he's not a two or anything, can kind of fill into that Klay Thompson role in a way that Kevin Durant can't. So I love the minutes on Thompson, I guess is what I'm saying.
The one thing I'm encouraged, reason I'm encouraged with their minutes right now is there is incentive for them to like sort of figure it out, right? Like to figure this, like figure out how these three, especially these three, we'll throw Draymond in there too, how those four guys really fit together. And I think there's early season incentive for them to just continue playing a lot of minutes together as they work through it. Like this would be, if I'm Golden State right now, I'm fine just sort of playing these guys a bunch to make sure that like everyone is clear on their roles going forward. And then when we sort of get a flow going, then we start maybe having a guy take a day off or, you know, maybe just cutting something short. And I think there's just going to be enough blowouts going forward that they're just going to naturally be able to manage those minutes. So, because they're going to figure this out and they are just going to, there's going to be games where they just win by 30 because they're just going to be too good. Like they'll just have everyone clicking from three and then you're just totally dead. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, not a perfect analogy either, but I think we saw this with the Cavs when they first got together with Love and James and Irving, where three guys all used to huge usage on their respective teams come together, and it can just take some time to figure it out. And frequently, I mean, we saw this in Miami too with Bosh and Wade and LeBron. Like, you can definitely have some growing pains trying to figure out who gets the ball when. And, like, I just look at this, so – you know, small things, right? But Durant last game, 16 free throw attempts. The next highest was 5. That's right. not really how Golden State's operated in the past. So this is a brave new world for them, and I'm very interested to see how they, you know, come out of it.
The big money guy at shooting guard today, or at least on FanDuel, he's a point guard on DraftKings, is Giannis. The Milwaukee is another season of, you know, minutes roulette basically with the Bucks, except for Giannis, thank God. Like at least one guy, like Jason Kidd's like, well, we know we have this one good player, the rest of these guys are kind of just a dumpster fire garbage pile, but at least we can just play this guy, and thankfully he can play every position, so there's never a reason to really have him off the court. And I'm hoping this continues for him because his floor is just so damn high with what he does. Great matchup against Pelicans today. Yeah. Can you see, you know, there's a couple big money guys, if you had to allocate salary between a guy like Giannis maybe or Durant, let's say, you know, at small forward. I know this is not a perfect comp because they play different positions and blah, blah, blah. There's value elsewhere. But like, who do you see as sort of like a safer play? Is it Giannis or Durant?
Oh, I guess I would have to say Giannis, just because in Golden State, I do think that, you know, that we've also seen sort of that turn-taking mentality with them in the past where like, today's Clay's big game, today's Curry's big game. And the fact that, Draymond only shot 9 times last game, I could see that turning around. I just think Giannis is just the whole Bucks offense at this point. He's their best rebounder, passer, and shooter. So it's just hard for him to take games off completely unless they're just getting blown out or something. So, yeah, I'll give the nod to Giannis there.
And the last guy I had in there was Waiters. Waiters is a guy, you know, Miami's, when we're talking about new teams this year, I would call Miami just a totally new team. And they, you know, they bring back Dragic and Whiteside, but they ditch Bosh and Wade, at least for the Bosh for the time being. And that's just a lot of shots coming out. And one of those guys that's filled it in has been Waiters. Waiters is a guy that I find to be almost just like wholly impossible to watch play, but he's cheap and the usage has been there. Miami has kind of shown its hand with how it wants to use him. Do you see him, like, is Waiters, I can't believe I'm even saying this, like, week two into the basketball season, but like, Waiters is a cash game play on FanDuel, 4,500.
I do think so. I mean, I think with Waiters in the past, you know, he's shot enough field goals in the NBA to where we know he's pretty solidly a 40% shooter from the field. Again, that's bad, but right. The fact that he's shooting just 31% from the field this season, to me, it points to a guy that it can only really head in the other direction. I mean, it's just really tough. It's going to, either he's not going to be on the team anymore or he's going to start shooting better. The fact that he's also kind of running hot from three, he's shooting 45% from three this season, actually just kind of leads me to believe that he might have his best shooting season yet. So I do think that'll turn around. I do think Waiters, you know, again, 34 minutes a game is just a lot for a guy who's, you know, one of the feature pieces of an offense to be $4,500. So I could see him turning more into like a, kind of like a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope type, but a slightly rich man's version of that, which I think we've seen is worth more like $5,000, $5,200, something in that range. And yeah, I don't think it's not like a slam dunk, you know, guy you're thrilled to put in every lineup, but very solid value, and I'd be happy to play him tonight.
Yeah, and one guy people might take a look at on that 6 o'clock slate is Harden. Harden obviously been a crazy usage guy. It's not for me against Cleveland. Cleveland's a good defensive team. I don't think you need to pay that premium price on a guy like Harden, even though he's just a different, I mean, he's clearly like playing a totally different role with D'Antoni this year, but Cleveland's just not a team that you like to target guys against in DFS. They play a little bit slower. They're pretty good on defense. They can kind of congest the lane a little bit with the way they trap D. So Harden is really not the guy that I want to pay 11-2 for on FanDuel.
Nah.
The moving into small forward. Now, the on the flip side of that game is LeBron. LeBron is one of these guys. Like, what? When you see LeBron show up in optimal lineups, and on a night where you have Giannis and Davis and Durant and guys like that, I have a specific feeling about this, but I'm wondering if it's the same for you. Like, so I ran the 6 o'clock optimals for FanDuel, and LeBron is in there at small forward. What's your gut reaction when you see that?
Whenever I feel that, I think, do we really have to play LeBron? No one else is going to play him. We're going to have to explain to people why we're playing LeBron. And then when I process those big emotions I have, right. Eventually I realize, well, it's probably just right to play LeBron, and it's probably just going to work out fine.
Right. And it's one of those things like Houston, this is where, again, it's so weird because he doesn't have – so LeBron is not like Davis and not like even Durant or Giannis, and he doesn't have like that 80-point upside, right? Like, and I'm saying 80 is like the tippy top of like – or the right end of the bell curve or whatever, right?
Right,
like,
where everyone on the rest of the team just stands around watching while he just slam dunks every time.
Right. LeBron does not have that. He's just not a big enough scorer, basically. Like, he can do all the other stuff, but he just doesn't take enough shots.
Well, I think it's mostly just that he has other guys on his team, and he's smart enough to keep them involved.
Well, same, but different. Like, it all ends up being the same kind of thing. He just doesn't need to, right, take over a game, so to speak. But – you know, this is the exact kind of game you want to get into, a fast-paced game. They're projected for a lot of points, I think second highest overall on the whole entire slate after Golden State. And he's just, like, for me, a guy that kind of fades into the background for cash games with people because it's just not sexy. Like, you're not going to get, like, that huge game performance. But I love having him for cash games, I think. Even though it doesn't make me feel great, I think I'm going to love it when it all comes out in the wash.
Yeah, I mean, we wound up playing him against Orlando when the rest of the field had Davis, and we got there, right? I mean, he outscored Davis by 16 points and put in that solid but unsexy, like 7 of 16 shooting, 6 rebounds, you know, like just nothing that you're pumped about. And then you wake up at the end and it's there. So he's a guy that you can definitely plug in good matchups. I actually think Houston, I wrote about this in my night on the picks a couple nights ago, but Houston are kind of the new Lakers in some respects, and that they're playing really fast. I don't think people are quite up on it just yet. And while they have, you know, some formerly competent defenders like Trevor Ariza, guys like that, most of their good defenders are past their prime, and the rest of their team are kind of indifferent defenders like James Harden. So, yeah, I could see LeBron, again, kind of a high-profile matchup. I could actually see him going off here. But to the safety point, yes, I think he's very, very safe in all formats.
Continuing the Miami theme from before with waiters, Justice Winslow is another guy who's seen a huge uptake in his usage in this new in the new Miami team. He's still coming really cheap. He's another guy who has just shot dreadful from the field so far, and I love situations like this where if I feel like I can get a guy who maybe the stat line doesn't look as great because he shot, I'm looking it up real quick, right, he's shooting 9% from three, he's shooting 40% from the field, but shooting just 9% from three, he's only coming at 5,000 on FanDuel. Do you think, like, is this a time to buy low on guys like this when they've just been, I mean, unless you think he's going to be a 10% three-point shooter for the rest of the season, is this another buy low candidate?
Nah, I think he's a definite buy low candidate. You pointed to the usage change, which is pretty dramatic. And his overall field goal percentage is not too far below his career levels, but the fact that he's already paying this price and he can pretty, I think, definitively said to be running bad, is just a huge sign for me. I mean, he's running a little bit below expectation in some other key stat areas as well, particularly steals per minute. He's known as quite an excellent defender, so I think those steals will come up as well. Yeah, I mean, he paid 6x on this price and kind of ran bad, so the sky's the limit for him, I think.
The other two guys I mentioned were Aaron Gordon and Robert Covington, where it's sort of, I think I'm fine. I mean, outside of LeBron, and I can see people, I mean, I can see Durant end up being like a chalky play because people are going to talk themselves into that game total. And I actually don't think it's incorrect necessarily to play him because I think the floor is pretty high. Gordon and Covington, I mean, to me, they kind of strike me as good per minute guys. And I just wonder about the minutes. It's like, do you have the same sort of feeling?
Yeah, I do. You know, Orlando, I still don't know how they want to use Aaron Gordon. I mean,
I don't think they know either. Yeah, I think they're confused about what they want their front court rotations to be, like in terms of just like who's going to sort of play where going forward.
Right. And then so like unlike Winslow, I think Gordon is kind of floating his ownership percentage based on some big performances from last season when we saw him as a starter. And so the fact that he's sort of the nominal starter in Orlando makes people more excited about him than I think is kind of reasonable from a safety perspective. I think the upside is unquestioned, right? I mean, he's a guy that we've seen put up big time double doubles in big minutes in the past, but you know, Ibaka crowds things up a little bit. I think from cash game perspective, I would play him potentially and maybe not feel great about it, but I do think he'll be a part of some winning big tournament lineups in the next month. I don't have any doubt about that.
Yeah, I think Vogel is trying to figure out what he wants to do because they've done weird things. Like they've gone double big with Biombo and Vucevic, yep. or Vucevic, which actually kind of like doesn't make any sense to me, but they've done it. And then Ibaka's still been sort of a usage guy as that stretch four. So yeah, that's the only thing that really worries me about Gordon is that I'm just not sure. When I don't think the team is sure about what they're doing with a guy, I think that I sort of get worried, which is why I'm fine on the main slate, definitely like paying up for LeBron sort of in this spot. But it's kind of Gordon, and Covington falls into that same category where, I mean, Philly, just another year, the sun rises, the sun sets, and Philly plays everyone 25 minutes, you know? Like, I don't know what to do. The good news with Covington is there's no Okafor today, which is going to shorten some of their at least big man rotations. And I know he doesn't necessarily fit into like the four and definitely not the five, but there's minutes to go around for a guy like him against Orlando. So I can see like going a little cheaper on him. And he has been a guy in close games they have been willing to sort of play.
Yeah, I like Covington. I have a soft spot for him, I guess. And while he didn't get it done against Atlanta, he certainly did on this price against Oklahoma City. So sure.
It's really funny. You said you have a soft spot for him. Like, it's even after years and years of doing this, I poo-poo people that like mention this like to me, and I still kind of, I know that I still hold these little ideas about guys in the back of my head. Like, so if I just see a guy, like Covington's a guy who I see and I just don't get like turned off to it, even though like, because I think I probably have just been a little bit better with Covington performances than like Aaron Gordon, right? Even though there's like, that shouldn't matter.
Well, Covington was on my team when I won my biggest ever GPP in basketball. So that's why I have a soft spot for him. I don't know what else to tell you.
At power forward, the guy, and he's going to be the chalkest of all chalk, I think, is Davis. I mean, is there really anything to even say about him at this point? Like, is he the highest owned big money guy by far in this slate and is not close? Like, I mean, what else do we even say about him, really?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's quite a good matchup with Milwaukee. We saw him completely eviscerate Golden State and Denver, although neither of them necessarily known for their front court defense, especially with Golden State losing Bogut. He took a step back against San Antonio. I mean, you don't love to see that. You don't like to see, I mean, the Pelicans last year were just ridiculous about jerking people's minutes around at the most random times. It's hard to believe that they'll do anything other than, especially given the lack of like Evans Holiday, it's hard to believe that plans A, B, and C are to just give Davis the ball every single time.
Yeah, they've just shown that that's their hand. They played it. It's fine. I mean, on FanDuel, we have him at 63 projected points. The next highest guy we have is Draymond at like 36. So it's like,
is that right? Oh my God, I didn't even notice that.
Right. Well, the usage is so crazy. Like, he's just taking all their shots. Like, if he's just going to be like a 25 shot plus per game guy, like, there's very few ball first guards that do that. Like Lillard, you know, like guys like that don't do that. So, and Lillard's maybe not a perfect example, but like, if you're just getting that out of the power forward spot, no other player even comes close to the kind of shot opportunity he gets. I mean, not to mention the rebounds and blocks and all the other stuff he does. Like, he just, there's no other power forward that even comes close with his kind of usage.
Yeah, I think I'm more landing in the rest of the package part, like the blocks and the rebounds and so on. Like, he's just not going to shoot 25 shots a game on the course of the whole season. Like that. I mean,
I don't know.
Off the top of your head, what do you think the max number of shots per game was for any player last season?
The max number of shots for one guy, like a non-overtime game, or just kind of doesn't matter?
No. Per game, on a per game basis, you know, sorting by attempts, what do you think the highest number was?
I don't know, 24?
20.
Really? Who was it?
Yeah. Boogie.
Really? Huh. Well, yeah. I mean, maybe I'm misevaluating like the current forms of usage. You're probably right. I mean, what helps him too is that they're just also willing to just trot him out there in close games, like to up to 40 minutes. Like, he just has the highest floor. I don't think, look, there's no case to be made for him. It just play him. He's probably should be like more of like a $12,000 player. He's just not there yet. And with the prices ticking up slowly, it won't be long till he is there. And that games like against a slow paced San Antonio team that actually gets it on defense and then also blew them out is going to maybe sometimes keep the price in check on him a little bit, but yeah, he just kind of does everything. After him,
yeah, I think that's right. And again, I think it's the part where he kind of does everything is the most reassuring piece for me. I think we have to go, yeah, so we have to go back to the 2005-2006 season where we had any player who averaged 25 shots a game when Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson went dueling banjos. Kobe at 27, Allen Iverson at 25. Other than that, though, in the last 10 years, the next highest was 22 shots a game. So just for people's modeling purposes, you know, I think it can be kind of easy to get carried away. And maybe Brow kind of sets a new precedent, but I think that kind of usage from a big man is like legit unprecedented, except for Wilt Chamberlain or something. So
right. It makes sense, too, because they don't control their own fate. Like you need that, you rely on someone else or, you know, multiple guys getting exactly. you the ball, unlike Kobe and Iverson and most of the other like Harden, Lillard, guys like that. They're going to end up being those like those higher shot opportunities because they're just going to control right. what they do from, you know, from the time they step over half court. After him, I wrote up Deng. I wonder if, you know, if you had to list guys like, you know, Georgie Deng, I can't have an impossible time saying his name, Kristaps Porzingis. Guys like this that are sort of like in this 5 to 6, Ibaka is kind of there. I wrote up Deng. I could be talked into a couple other different guys. Like who kind of stands out to you from, you know, in that sort of range, that's like sort of mid-tier cheaper range?
Deng is a slam dunk for me. I mean, we've seen him in the starting lineup put up big numbers very, very consistently. Does it on points, rebounds, and blocks. So, you know, if he's running bad in one area, he can occasionally make up for it in another area. He's skilled around the basket. I think Thibodeau's kind of been impatient with less than willing defenders in the past, and Deng kind of has that reputation. You know, one of the things we talk about internally all the time, mostly because we haven't had a basketball podcast until right. now, is trying to evaluate these big men who are excellent scorers and rebounders, but who don't seem to be that effective on defense. So picture Enes Kanter or maybe like Jusuf Nurkic on Denver, guys like that. Deng has fallen in that category in the past, but it just looks like Thibodeau sees him as this guy. And I think the other guys you mentioned, Porzingis, and who's the other one?
I said Ibaka.
Ibaka, yeah. Porzingis and Ibaka, both of them have fallen in and out of favor with their coaches from a minutes perspective. So, yeah, Deng is in a whole tier above in my rankings.
Well, it's a new coach in New York, and I'm still trying to figure this out. Like, it's Hornacek in New York, so, like, Kristaps has played, and that makes sense. Like, he was maybe 32 and 36 minutes in the first
game. Yeah, future of the franchise, sure.
Right, and the first game, I believe, against Cleveland, I think was a blowout. So, yes. If he's going to be, like, a 35-minute game, like, sort of on lock, if they can stay close, then I think that he probably has more upside than Deng, but the safety in Deng is just having that coach and that set sort of rotational piece to it. And Minnesota just does that. And I just can't see getting away from that floor with the minutes mostly, even though the Memphis matchup is not fantastic from just like a defensive and pace standpoint. I think I'm still willing to sort of roll it. I mean, Detroit doesn't play like breakneck either for Stapp. So sure. It's not like he kind of just goes crazy and stands out above the rest, but I think I'm just totally fine going in that mid range. At least, like, you know, this is noon on so 6 hours before tip. But and then the other guy I mentioned was Ibaka. Ibaka is just kind of the opposite. Like, what can you trust with Orlando? I think he's fine from a usage perspective, but they just are still figuring out that front court. Same with Aaron Gordon, and I just don't think they know exactly what they want to do yet.
Yeah, worth noting on Porzingis just briefly, just because you pointed at the new coaching change, his usage is a little bit down. He has 12 shots a game versus last year's 12.3, but he's playing 6 more minutes. So, you know, very, very early to make any determinations on that, especially given how matchup dependent big men shooting can be, but just to have on your radar, I guess, going forward.
And finally, the position that I kind of just don't really want to play at all today is center. center. Oh, excuse me. One more guy I did write up real quick. I wrote up Al-Farouq Aminu as a GPP play today because he's been a guy that we've always been a little bit worried about his minutes because, you know, yeah. Portland will go a couple different ways. Now, that being said, last year, if you want to just take one comp, they did play the I think it was 6 or 7 game series against Golden State in the playoffs, and Aminu played huge minutes in those games at the 3 and sort of the 4-2. Their team is mostly the same this year, and if you want like a guy who could, you know, if Stotts wants to go sort of like those same rotations, I could see him getting like in those mid 30, like you can never trust the minutes, but this might be a time where I think you might be able to. And so, I don't know, as like a GPP play, I could see Aminu as another guy that you can get value in off of that high total game.
I like it.
All right. Thanks, buddy. At center, I hate everybody. I really struggled. I flew through the picks last night and then I hit center and just bogged my whole entire night down by just trying to figure out like what the hell is going on here. I just kind of hate everybody. I wrote up Miles Turner against the Lakers. I don't even love it because he's not even cheap. And like the Lakers are fine. I mean, the Lakers are still kind of bad on defense, so whatever. But there's a lot of mouths to feed in Indiana. He has been sort of a usage guy to start the season. He had a big first game, I think, which threw people a little bit off, but the game went to overtime. So it kind of like makes the whole line look a little bit off because he just got that 5 extra minutes in overtime against Dallas. Is he a guy, like, can we trust him in cash games at 7,100 on FanDuel? And if not, like, then if not him, then who? I guess would be the question.
Yeah, that really is the question. I don't know. I mean, I think he's fine, kind of in that same category. On my list, I had Vucevic, but Orlando's been jerking everyone's minutes around so dramatically that right. I'm not exactly sure what you do there. Another guy, I guess, will be on radars, and it's arguably not the spot to spend up, will be DeMarcus Cousins. You know, he actually is a guy who's sort of paying these prices, but it's a bad matchup with Miami, so, you know, do what you will, I guess. Yeah, Turner good. I mean, Turner incredible upside, right? Like, we've seen when it's clicking, Indiana will just dump him the ball. But man, it felt better to play him at 5,800 than it does at 7,100. That's all.
I mean, another guy like that is sort of like Hassan Whiteside seemed to increase in shots this season. I think he's like second or third on the team, and he's just taking a lot more shots than we thought he would going into the season. He gets to face up against that sort of that Kings interior. He's expensive. Like, it feels really crazy to pay premium prices for some of these guys, like
for a guy who plays 31 minutes,
Karl Anthony Towns too. Bad matchup against Memphis, and he hasn't really been totally great shakes going that double big offense. So with Deng out there also with him, so the rebounding really hasn't been there for him. You know, Drummond against New York, I really just don't like center tonight. I really wish there was just like one cheap guy we could get out. Well, so I have one guy I did write up, and this is you really can't do this in cash games, but Embiid is only 4,500. He's on a minutes cap, in that like 20 to 24 minute cap against Orlando. He's only 4,500, and he was a guy, I think the other day he played, let me give this line, he played 22 minutes, he went 20-7 in 22
16
minutes.
16 shots.
Yeah. Right. They will just kind of feed him the ball in the time. There's no Okafor tonight either. So they will feed him the ball in offense. Is there any like cash game, is there any cash game precedent to play him at so cheap, even though you know you're totally capped on the minutes?
Yeah, I mean, the minutes cap is going to come into question here, right? Like, Okafor wasn't playing a ton, but was playing 15 or 16 minutes a night. So those minutes do have to go somewhere. And if, you know, when you're talking about guys who are generating extreme value per minute, that extra, like Boban or something last year, right, that extra 5 or 7 minutes really does make a huge difference. But man, 20 minutes on the court is just not very much. And, you know, given that he wasn't super, super effective, like at least in it from a real basketball perspective, you know, turned the ball over a decent amount, didn't shoot very well from the field. Like, you can't just keep giving a guy the ball 16 shots or giving a guy 16 shots in 20 minutes if that's how he's going to shoot. So, when in doubt, escaping a bad position cheaply has always been our mantra, but man, oh man, this could not work out well.
Right.
That's my feeling on a guy like Embiid.
I think center is the place where people will have the hardest time tonight. That is a position where if nothing really stands out, nothing jumps to the front, unless, and I really looked at this, I really don't think there's a guy that I'm just missing. Like, there's just a lot of these guys are either in bad matchups or they're just simply too expensive. Like, to think about paying, you know, it's weird because like to think about paying something like, let me give you an example, like 9,900 for Cousins against Miami or 9,600 for Giannis. I know it's a different position, but it's like kind of not that close to
no,
me,
but
right?
we often talk about how, you know, in fantasy sports, it's easy to compare guys positionally, but that's not actually the decision you make in DFS. Oftentimes you're making decisions around price tiers instead. And I think that's a very worthwhile comparison. And Giannis is a slam dunk over Boogie in that spot to me. Another guy I'm actually considering, though, is Joakim Noah. Noah's been playing relatively consistent minutes. And, you know, he's like one of those guys who kind of spreads out his production across multiple different stats. And I could see him being a very reasonable play. You know, if we think he's going to be in that low 20s minutes range, he's kind of a safe version of Embiid to me.
Yeah, I can see it. I just, this whole thing is just has me, I really wish, I just wish that I could, like, if I knew that Noah was going to go out and play like 26 minutes tonight, I would lock him up, but it's just like 19, 21 minutes. I don't know. It's just, it feels bad. Center's bad. Hey, nothing like ending the show on a bad note, huh? Like,
I personally enjoy ending this show on a bad note. Yes.
Me too. All right. This has been our first NBA podcast. I had a great time, buddy. I feel like I personally total A+ from me. What do you think for yourself?
Yeah, A minus.
Interesting. We'll talk about that off air. We're from Daily Fantasy Sports.
Mostly because of that Chris Dunn thing, you know, like in retrospect, calling him something less than a must play. Like, that's going to be one of those things where as I'm walking the dog later, I'm like, why did I say that? Why did I say that? You know?
So. Yeah, well, that's why I'm actually wondering why you only took yourself down by one minus point. Like, that to me takes you down to a
C. Well, it's
C.
A full 8 point. Like, if you gave yourself an A plus at 99%, I was more like in the 91% range.
You know what? Nothing better than self-evaluation to end the pod instead of just ending on a bad note.
Yeah, this was thrilling stuff, I'm sure.
Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings is the site, dfsr.com for short. Head over to the site, free 3-day trial to the projection system. Like I said, it's been absolutely crushing the start of the season. And if you need any testimonials, go over to the chat room on the site. Just say, is this worth it? And people will just give you all of the NBA love that you'll ever need to sign up. No one does a better sales pitch than our users. So dfsr.com, free 3-day trial, powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You're set for 3 days, then $29.95 a month after that. You won't be disappointed, buddy. We'll be back again on Wednesday talking more NBA.
I will see you there.